Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 63 on Monday, the 19th of September, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
And we're a night early. It's Monday.
Not only that, but we're face to face.
We are, and we're actually looking at each other this time.
Which briefly.
Almost unheard of before we start looking at our individual screens. Opposite sides of the microphone here. So, yes, we are actually. Do you want to explain why we're actually in the same place at the same time?
Or? Not at all. No, it's a secret.
Okay. That works for me.
No, of course you can.
No, we're at the SMMT North tomorrow, so we are actually both in the same place at the same time, round about the sort of time that we'd want to record a podcast, so we thought we'd do it tonight.
Yes, because we wouldn't be doing it tomorrow night.
No.
We'd struggle the night after.
Definitely.
And then it would be almost the weekend.
Yeah. And so we'd pretty much be done. So, yeah. But yeah. We're here tonight because this is the night we can record more than anything else. So we've actually got absolutely stacks to talk about tonight.
Only a quick follow-up, though.
Yeah. There is actual news this week, not just follow-up, which is kind of what happened last time. So, sorry.
If you remember back to episode 42, I think it was, we talked about the then new Mayor of London's consultation on the clean air for London, which I may have got teensy-weensy bit cross about what was being suggested.
You got quite angry.
for measures to improve air quality, as they may have been a little bit narrow in their scope and ideas. Well, the results have come in from the first consultation. And I noticed this just by chance on a Saturday night on Twitter, where at Clean Air London account tweeted, they tweeted, breaking news, gobsmackingly strong support for bigger, stronger, sooner action by at Mayor of London to hammer diesels, which irked me a little bit. So I may have engaged in a bit of a conversation where we to'd and fro'd. Semantics were deployed by Clean Air.
Very much, yes.
Coming back and saying, I said, oh, that's great, just hammer motorists because they're an easy target. Oh, no, we're not saying that. We're saying diesels. So I replied along the lines of, well, yeah, but what's the most popular engine out there? It's obviously the diesel, and it's going to, as I said in episode 42, which there will be a link in the show notes for, it just, that hits the poorer end, because the poor end of society have cars which are older, more polluting, not as looked after as they should be, as one would hope, because they can't afford to. I was told the usual thing that these people who don't really think about these things, other than the one specific issue they are talking about, and they said, "Oh, but the poorest don't own cars," which I've heard many times, and is utter garbage. Yes, the absolute poorest don't, and they're living in a cardboard box under a bridge because society treats people like that. But if we're talking about people who do have these old cars which are not well maintained and all the rest of it, that generally tends to be the poorer end of society. So sticking a charge on top of people who can't afford to look after their cars for having these cars is only penalising people who don't have money, because people who do have money that have polluting cars, Lamborghinis and all the rest of it, don't give a monkey's about what they're charged. I mean, they don't. If you go around London, most of them don't care. They've got a car parking ticket at whatever thousands of pounds that eventually racks up to. So to say that this is going to solve the problem is absolute nonsense. And the fact that they are only looking at vehicles and they are not looking at any ideas to encourage people to not use their car more often, or not use it in the centre of London, or the new revised clean air zone, which will expand to be basically anything within the M25, from what I can see,
Well, the ULEZ already is. The ultra-low emission zone already exists. The outer boundary. It's that looking to expand essentially the charging zone out past kind of Camden and Haringey to the north, out to the left, out to the west, past Hammersmith and Fulham, out to the right over Tower Hamlets, Newham, and down east. South. Yes, to the east. This is geography, me. I don't know what you show glacial trough is, but don't ask me north, south, east, and west. And down to the south, most of the way past the Lambeth and all that kind of way. So that is a quick guess by looking at the relative areas between the current congestion charge zone and all of that. And it is, it's probably 10 times bigger.
Yeah. They might as well just say the southeast, really.
Yeah, well, that would be an advantage. Mm. As someone who spent 5.5 hours in London traffic last Friday, I could
in your low emitting vehicle.
It was
or
it,
non. Yes. Was yes. It non?
It's a ZEV.
Oh,
ZEV. It was a ZEV. Zero emission vehicle. In terms of purposes. So yeah.
Yes. There will be a link to the article that discusses the results. And one of the short answers is, if you ask people, do they want clear air, they say yes.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, no, can I have more pollutants, please? Yes. Can I have more of a chance of dying early? No, please, can I?
Of course they're going to. I like the inhalation of particulates in the morning.
Yes.
All these things.
There will be this, but this is now going to prompt a further consultation, I think, basically to decide what measures are going to take and exactly how quick they're going to take them.
Yeah. So more news on that when it appears.
Good. I will hopefully have lowered my blood pressure before that happens.
Yeah, he's got all sort of red and glowy, folks. That's why I was just leaving him in case he exploded. I can't normally tell what colour he's gone in these things. Anyway, some new news.
New news.
That was all the follow-up this week, amazingly. But Fiat Chrysler is to recall more than 4,000 UK vehicles, according to Autocar. And that recall is all about airbag defects this time around. A lot of vehicles from around the world affected, including Dodge Calipers, Dodge Avengers, Jeep Patriot and Compass models. I am sorry, these are some of the worst vehicles.
The Chrysler 200.
Yeah,
Chrysler. And the Sebring.
Okay, so Chrysler 200 was just a Dodge Avenger, wasn't it? And the 2010 Chrysler Sebring, as well as the 2012 to 2013 Lancia Fulvia. Don't tell me they did a Lancia badge on a Sebring convertible. I hope I'm wrong. I don't even want to know. No. I'm sorry, I've only just... Yeah, this is called doing all your research in advance. I don't even want to know what that is.
No, but here's the thing. We're being told that it will affect 4,196 vehicles, which is an incredibly precise amount. But no one can yet say which models are involved in the UK. So how do you know there are 4,196 cars,
yes,
but not tell me one of the models? As ever, we will add this to follow up once somebody has decided which model it is.
Yeah, it's according to this Autocar article, a statement from FCA in North America, that the condition may occur when vehicles equipped with a particular occupant restraint control module and front impact sensor wiring of a specific design are involved in certain collisions. So it may be not just model specific, but specification specific as well. And it's trying to narrow that down.
4,196.
I know, it's still incredible.
I know they will go back and they will have worked out the part is and how many times that's been deployed. I understand
4,196 plus or minus. Exactly that, plus or minus 137 or something. Anyway, yes, a number of those. So if any of you do have Dodge Calipers, Dodge Avengers, Jeep Patriots and Jeep Compasses, compasses, then just burn them. Just burn them. Just get rid of them.
There's a top consumer tip from the Motoring Podcast.
We don't give too many out, but just really, come on, guys. Those are appalling. Oh, well, each to their own, I suppose.
Well, yeah, that's what makes the wonderful motoring world that we all love.
It is. It is. Or something like that.
Right, moving on.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we have actually talked about anything Tesla.
Yes, mercifully.
But it's back. It's back this week. You're probably aware that Mobileye, in the article I'm reading, it's been said is ended its relationship, which I think is a very polite way of saying left, ran out the door, told them to go away and never call them again.
I think what can best be characterized as a feral bust up.
Yes, it's been a very public slanging match since Mobileye and Tesla parted ways. With Mobileye,
so this has nothing to do with navigation apps.
This is all part of doing the autopilot technology. Mm-hmm. Mobileye left when they were being they said because of the safety concerns they had with how Tesla was pushing forward with it, and they had a meeting face to face with Mr. Musk, who had assured them that it would not be deployed in a way that it could be activated with hands off the steering wheel. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So that they've ended the relationship because of that. Tesla then shot back again in public by saying, oh no, they heard we were doing our own autopilot stuff development. So they then tried to come back and stick the price up of their part and have nothing else to do with the project. So no, it was nothing to do with that.
That sounds a little bit like, well, we didn't need them anyway.
Yes, there's basically, and then Mobileye came back again and rounded off theirs with saying, and of course, basically saying, we don't wash our dirty linen in public, with all of us going, but you just have, all of you have. It's very silly what you've all been doing. Who knows who's telling the truth? That's the problem.
Exactly. It's there. He says she's.
It's brought it to everybody's attention in the way it's been handled, not what the matter is.
Yes.
And we should be discussing what the subject is, not that people are throwing mud at each other in public over blog posts and Twitter and stuff like that. And that's very daft and silly.
Exactly.
And disingenuous to people who own the product or who are thinking of buying it or who are. It just adds fuel to whichever evangelical camp is reading it at the time. And that's the problem. It has become so tribal whenever you mention Tesla that it's, you know, oh no, everything that's done by Tesla is wonderful. And then everything that's done by Tesla is dreadful. And there's no longer any constructive discussion about these things to try and make it happen well. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, as we've said before, I've said before, Tesla needs to work at what they're outlining they say they're going to do. Otherwise, in the general public view, people will see A, that electrified vehicles can't work, and B, that autonomous devices and assistants can't work, because they will sit there and go, well, if Tesla can't do it, no one can.
Exactly.
And which is not right, and it's not fair on the rest of the motoring manufacturers and industry, but that is the general perception because of the power that Tesla have with PR and being in mainstream press. And I've waffled on enough about that.
Yes. I'm agreeing.
You didn't have to agree so much that I've waffled on.
That wasn't meant to be agreement with the waffling on.
But no, you mentioned
adding
it.
Adding my support to your statement. It has got very much into the. It's becoming a religious argument and not actually one based in
cult.
It's cult. Fact, it is cult.
Yep.
So should we move on to another company that we've talked about quite a lot recently?
Last
year. But on a completely different topic. So, yes, it's Volkswagen. And no, it's not Dieselgate.
Woo!
Listener Stuart Coulson has pointed out an article from Computer World, which is not a magazine I regularly read.
Well, it's not obscure. It's not like the Bridges of the A34 or something, is it?
Really good, that website. I can't remember its name. But yeah, so Computer World, and it's saying that Volkswagen has set up a new security company in Israel, which is specifically looking to look at sort of cybersecurity threats on vehicles, which is a great thing. You might be asking, why Israel? Israel itself has a great startup culture there. It's got lots of the right people with the right skills.
A lot of computer security as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That's what I meant by right people with the right skills. Just there, as well as you know, the country itself has a lot of security experts. Indeed, some of those have been recruited by Volkswagen. So three of them are. I've now lost what I was reading. Three of them include the former chief of the country's internal security service. There's going to be some of the senior management just there. Volkswagen's not looking for this to be a super quick turnaround. They're looking to it to be, in their words, a long-term investment.
Cymotive Technologies.
Oh, it's a good name, though, isn't it? Oh, that's a good name.
Cyber and Motive, Automotive together. Well done.
Yeah, that's really good. That can lead to a great logo. Great logo and a fantastic end to corporate videos. That's going to work. Volkswagen, keeping with the Volkswagen, definitely not Dieselgate theme, then, and the reference we've got here, which of course, like all the others, will be in the show notes, is from Andrew Brady on Motoring Research, was Volkswagen's senior management, nothing to do with Cymotive this time, Volkswagen's senior management have been talking about autonomous vehicles.
Well, this is all part of the 1 year on from Dieselgate. We are showing how we are changing what our plans are for the future and outlining it to everyone else, because they've had a year to deal with trying to mitigate the effects to the company and come up with solutions to sort the engine problem and therefore deal with customers. But also, it was announced very quickly when Dieselgate came out that they were going to switch their focus towards electrification of vehicles, and with that will automatically come autonomous. Mm-hmm. Which, without breaking out my tinfoil hat, I get a little bit twitchy about, because I'd like them to get, whichever company talks about it, get the electrified fixed. Mm-hmm. And then do the autonomous, or don't try and do the two at once, because it's diverting. I worry that it could divert resources and manpower and focus. Mm-hmm. And I think the first thing that needs to happen really for us now is to get the electrified vehicle side of things tightened down, get longer ranges, as we've discussed in recent shows.
Yeah.
Longer ranges, so therefore the general public, buying public, considers electrified vehicles as a proper viable choice. Mm-hmm. Then worry about the autonomous stuff, because legally all the countries are scrabbling to catch up on autonomous anyway. So this isn't going to happen by 2020. And all these people that are projecting and saying, oh, we'll have autonomous cars all over the roads by 2020, these manufacturers, that's not going to happen, because legislatively we're not going to be ready. Also, I would suggest that psychologically, certainly in this country, we're not going to be ready. Yeah. Certain portions of certain roads may be autonomous as test beds.
for example.
That yes, because of the lorries and the... Mm-hmm. What do you call it? What do they call it when they're all quite close together?
Platooning.
Platooning, yes. Sorry.
I couldn't work out from the arm waving quite what that was.
It's clearly platooning by me.
But the Volkswagen bosses are saying that that stage 5 autonomous cars, let alone stage 4, are likely to happen for a number of years. Now, I heard somewhere recently, I don't think it was through this story, someone was saying they were expecting it to be about. Oh.
Ding, that's a yawn.
Oh, I can't even. I can't get away with trying to stifle it now.
No, I have ignored four others up to now because I've been speaking.
Yeah, I know, which I normally get away with. But someone was saying recently somewhere that they were expecting it to be 40 years before we even got to level 4.
Wow.
Autonomy.
I hadn't come across that one. Well,
now don't quote on that. The
problem is with the autonomy is being able. A lot of it is being able to detect the road ahead.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you go around Britain. I mean, I was driving around Manchester and then Greater Manchester in the countryside of Cheshire and that today, and the differences in the roads is startling. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, one section of very nice road that's been clearly marked out suddenly goes into a pothole-ridden bit that's got no lines on the side, which is what a lot of the technology currently uses for lane-keeping assistance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. That.
It is.
Is that they are detecting the white lines and making sure that the car is in the middle of the white lines. But you go into a rural road... or a road that's just been, for example, just been recovered, like one near me, that hasn't yet got any lines painted. How's a car supposed to deal with that? And the technology isn't there, or the software, or the development isn't there, able to cope with that yet.
No, not quite. No. But it's getting there. But I think that's a reasonable. I think Volkswagen being reasonable and realistic in saying, just hang on, we will certainly not be showing this very quickly.
No, I agree with that. I agree that it's not going to happen quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's... Well, were they working on autonomous vehicle stuff before Dieselgate? Because if they weren't, it's like the electrified. It was sort of in the plans, but they're having to... they're having to turn the tank around to focus on these things now. And it's a big shift in culture and projects and stuff like that. So, you know, there's no way that... I mean, I'm very surprised at the number of electrified vehicles they reckon they're bringing out by 2020 anyway.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, that's going to be a big...
that's a big ask.
Big ask anyhow. But you asking about them and autonomous vehicles, there was a... I can't quite type quietly enough because we're both on the same track tonight and I know we can't get away with it. To find one of their concept cars from the 1980s that could park itself. I'm sure the name went on to be used for an actual production model. But there was one there and it could do very simple autonomy. But that was the late 80s and early 90s from memory. I'll look it up afterwards because that's going to annoy me.
Well, if friends of the show could tweet this in, because someone's bound to know. Knowing our listeners out there.
Knowing our listeners, they'll have got this far and then sent us three tweets.
Shouting at their podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Player.
Yeah. So, if you could tell us, hopefully we'll have it in the show notes by the time this comes out. But Andrew, there was a... government, UK government announcement on not so much on some of the things that we want to do when our vehicles are autonomous. Was UK announcement about texting and driving and phone use, wasn't it?
Yes. I'm not going to be too cynical about this. I'm trying not to be because it's going to bring politics into it, and I don't want to do that. But it was announced over the weekend. It was announced over the weekend Well, you just look back at my tweets over the weekend, then you'll see what I was talking about. But it was announced over the weekend that the government are considering, which got lost in a lot of the headlines.
Oh, now you see that got lost on me.
Considering much tougher penalties for people using mobile phones following a very short but very visible campaign from leading mainstream newspapers.
Red top newspapers, yeah?
Yeah. They're not quite good enough to be that, but yes.
Yeah, but you can't use them for toilet paper either.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. I just wouldn't use them at all. Fire lighters, maybe. But it's what's being considered is making it 6 points and a £200 fine if you're caught using a mobile on your phone in your car, if you're using the phone in your car. Now, obviously, using a mobile when driving, if it's not hands-free, is deplorable, stupid, and, you know, it should be a tough penalty. There's lots of research out there that shows if you're using even hands-free, you are severely impaired in your reactions because you are concentrating on something else. It is difficult to hold a conversation and be fully concentrating as one needs to be behind the wheel or should be behind the wheel at all times, and we're all guilty of it. So I'm not pretending I'm Snow White in any way here. Yeah, it should be. And for the sake of, it's £20 to get a Bluetooth headset. If you really, really need to be talking on your phone whilst driving, it's £20 for a really good Bluetooth headset. It's £5 for a mount on your windscreen. You do not have to be touching it. You can still have your hands on the steering wheel. You just shouldn't be doing it.
Really. Yeah, just don't do it, folks.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. That's the general outcome.
But the main problem with this is another one of these laws that sound very impressive, or one of these changes. However, unless we have more police, unless we have more ways of catching people doing this, it's pointless. It's just a tick box exercise for the government. It satisfies a couple of ragtops newspapers by saying, oh, look, see, we've made this wonderful campaign and look, they've changed their minds. But in reality, does it make any differences? For example, the big announcement that was made a year or two ago over people who hogged the middle lane were going to be fined and they were going to have points and all this sort of stuff. Well, it turns out, and there will be a link to the Motoring Research article about this from Andrew Brady again. It's not the Andrew Brady show. But a Freedom of Information investigation discovered that there had only been 135 on-the-spot fines for lane hogging.
Yeah, it's quite bad.
135.
Now, there was a point made in here which which means that a lot of them can be classed as careless driving rather than specifically as lane hogging.
Okay,
so some of them might be getting lost in... More charitable amongst us might
but
say...
But not in the thousands that are...
But not in the thousands, no. Now, there is one police force who's quite good at tweeting some of this stuff, and I can't remember which one it is. There's one police force that does tweet every time, quite often. And they do seem to be sort of making a point of saying, well, look, we are stopping people, we are pulling people over, or hogging the middle lane. And as someone who uses motorways quite a lot, I think this is a very good thing. Very annoying.
Yes.
Late in the evening, otherwise deserted motorway. I'm sitting quite happily on the left-hand side, and then someone doing significantly lower speed than the speed limit. And so I have to go right out across three lanes. In order to be legal, you're right out across three lanes, overtake them, right back across again. It's just annoying and unnecessary.
I know, it causes a lot of traffic issues as well. Having spent a lot of the summer on cursed motorways. Because all motorways in the UK are cursed.
Yes.
I'm convinced of that. People will see something so far ahead, and instead of thinking, but I can indicate and someone will let me in and then I can get back out the way, they go, no, I will now move across. This is if they are thinking of moving into a lane at all, rather than just sitting in one lane.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that is the challenge.
So until money is put back into the police forces and we can get more traffic police, new laws almost seem pointless.
Yeah, if they can't be in, because something,
because you can't be enforced. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It cannot be enforced, and you can easily see that the quick way around that is for governments to go, oh no, we'll put more cameras up.
Because it's a camera going to see through the reflections on the windscreen. And
well,
the
but
heights of
but also on top of that, do we need? You know, we are the most surveilled country in Western Europe through cameras already, and because people think, oh, that's an economic way to do it because we're not having... Because it is very expensive to stick two police officers in an expensive traffic car on a road for that time. However, I counter that by saying by them being visible, that reduces many more accidents that aren't necessarily taken into account on a spreadsheet.
Yes, the trouble is it can be very hard to quantify what... Because the whole rule... In an ideal world, our police officers, whether in their car, in cars or otherwise, should never have to do anything. It should just being there and being enough of a deterrent should be enough. And that is what happens on the roads, but it's not what happens elsewhere. But yeah, I agree totally. I would actually like to see more policemen on the roads and more traffic cars around. Just because there's a human and it's understanding of context is important. So speed can be dangerous in, you know, depending on the circumstance, absolutely. But equally, a lack of speed can also be dangerous in certain circumstances as well. And you see that quite often. You see the wrong speed in the wrong place. I'm sitting in the wrong lane there, and cameras can't really pick up with that.
Yeah, something may have happened seconds before, which makes it look as though the image they've caught.
Yeah.
Right, should we move on?
Let's move on quickly. Another quick autonomous car story. This one from Autocar this time. A Swedish firm called Semcon has developed a concept car that smiles, and the reason it smiles is to reassure pedestrians that it is safe to cross the road. Okay, this concept car has a display mounted where the grille should be, which shows a smile when you're stopped at crossings, letting pedestrians know that it's safe to cross, even if the driver isn't in control of the vehicle at the time. I can see no issues with this at all. Yeah, I can see loads. The other thing about this is that... Well, the reasoning behind it is a survey carried out by Semcon found that 80% of pedestrians look for eye contact with drivers whilst they're getting ready to cross the street, and that's not going to be possible necessarily.
They're not driven in, they've not been in a UK city then, because that's not what happens.
No, this is Sweden. This is you know, if it's a Swedish company, it's in Sweden, I can completely believe it.
You know, if you give them more human characteristics, we'll accept them more quicker.
That's scary. Don't say it in that voice. Yeah.
I can see the idea behind having a signal to say, hang on, you know, this is an autonomous vehicle. I'm acknowledging that you are there. I am not going to move. Off you go.
Yeah.
I can see the sense in that in some shape or form. Putting a smile?
Well, the thing is, in the pictures, and I'm sure there'll be a link to this article, it is actually really creepy. You can just imagine it turning into a frown when you're halfway across a pedestrian crossing and trying to flatten you. It is not wonderfully reassuring, and I think it's because whatever vehicle it is they've chosen has a slightly scowly face to begin with. which isn't really helping. It's just a weird grimace.
I can guess what the car is, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah, me neither. Their not first to have done this last month, a Silicon Valley company called Drive.ai, who are another autonomous driving company, unveiled a roof-mounted emoji display to communicate with pedestrians. Now, I can't tell what most emojis are meant to be.
Unless it's thumbs up.
Little poo.
It's chocolate ice cream.
Oh, is it? Okay, that's fair enough. Then, I'm not really sure about that one. The whole thing actually reminds me of Toyota concept cars from a little while ago, because they've been dealing with that kind of thing. One of them is the FV2.
Ding, that's number two.
Which changes colour depending on the emotions of the driver. And there was another...
The emotions of the driver?
Supposedly, yes, so you could convey emotion. And there was another one which looks a little bit like the Google car, which did similar.
And you're not allowed to type now.
I know, I'm not allowed to type now. But I ran out of time beforehand to find out what the other
one was. If he does find it, I will put the link in the show notes. But
yes, I will do. Which showed the emotion on the outside of the vehicle as well. Anyway, moving on, because we are waffling lots tonight. Oh, moving on is my grovel spot. Yes, it is that time in the show when I do the podcasting equivalent of shaking a bucket in your faces, although thankfully not dressed in a Pudsey Bear suit. All we ask of you is a few moments of your time to leave a star rating and review for us via the podcast playing platform of your choice. The most popular and powerful podcasting platform of all is iTunes. So, if possible, a 5-star rating on there is hugely influential. It only takes a few moments of your time. It means a lot to us, making us more visible to potential new listeners. Similarly, on other podcast apps such as Stitcher, Downcast, Overcast, and the like. A rating means a lot, so thank you. Okay,
yep.
Moving on. Nicely timed there. Yes. More motoring coming to tellies, computers.
Yes, we've finally had it announced that the Grand Tour is going to start on November the 18th. And it's going to be weekly. Thereafter, as Jeremy Clarkson's tweet says. So that's great news. So those of you who, before Clarkson et al. Left the BBC, mm-hmm. were busy saying, this is the same old garbage, why are we paying for it? Get working on your tweets now. Mm-hmm. Save them up, because I'm imagining you're going to watch this just so you can be angry.
Yes.
And the rest of us who enjoyed the show and for what it was, which was an entertainment show that happened to use cars, mm-hmm. I think we're all looking forward to seeing what they actually come up with, considering some of the colossal budgets that have been alleged.
Yes, which have also then been pointed out by Andy Wilman, though there's nothing really. It isn't really quite what people are reporting it to be.
But the trailer looks along the lines of what we expect and want from Clarkson, Hammond and May.
Yes. And I noticed here that someone asked Chaplain Nick Griffin, I'm sure he's had nothing to do with politics ever, asked Jeremy Clarkson, will we get a Christmas special? Brackets not related to the episodes, to which Clarkson replied, yes. So there we go. So there will be loads. And there will be... Someone asked how many episodes and how long is each one, and he said there will be 12-hour-long episodes. Well, I assume that that's 12 one-hour-long episodes as opposed to each episode is 12 hours long. So,
and that's all via Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime Video, yeah.
Yeah, and didn't you... see a tweet.
Oh yes, I saw a tweet from James May had retweeted something from Amazon pointing out that here in the UK, up until the release of Grand Tour, there was, I believe, there was a cheaper offer on Prime Video, and also money off an Amazon mini stick.
Fire stick.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't care. It's all the wrong ecosystem for me.
Yes.
So yes, and money off.
So you're not going to get the Echo speaker then?
No, I'm probably not going to get the Echo.
It apparently works very well. But it's not for me
either.
I was
actually going to ask you if you were going to get it.
No,
because
I
can just imagine you with that kind of thing in your house.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Really? Well, in a cupboard, in its box, not being opened.
Freaking out at every possible infringement of privacy.
Yes, there's something like that. Something that would be my worry.
Yes, I was catching up on Daily Tech News Show today on the way all around. Getting some of those in. Another fine podcast, by the way. If you do like news podcasts, you might find the format is vaguely familiar. I forgot what's next. Oh, it's me.
Yes.
Yes. This is actually so much easier over Skype. Don't know why. So yes, one from Front Seat Driver, from Phil Huff, about the latest Caterham kit cars.
Yes.
And these, for once, aren't actually made by Caterham. They're made by Lego. So yes, finally, Lego has come out with a Caterham. It's a model of the Caterham 7 620R, and it in yellow with black stripes. It's about 28 centimeters long when assembled. It comes with a removable nose cone and engine cover. It's got a working boot. Impressive on the Caterham. There's axle stands so you can do it part built and you can display it. I just think it looks fantastic. It'll be about £70. It should be available from October the 1st. And I want one. Lots.
Don't look at me. I'm not buying you any Christmas presents.
Well, the trouble is that I passed through Copenhagen Airport. Copenhagen Airport has not just one, but two Lego stores in it.
Really? Let's think why.
I know, exactly. You'd always think they were trying to advertise something Danish. so, yeah, October the 1st. When am I next to that? Ooh, very end of September. And then just a little...
tease you with posters, then.
Hmm.
No, but that's great. You can see an awful lot of birthday stroke Christmas lists being constructed now around...
Oh, yeah.
Dear Santa, please... I am Neil, aged 42, from Bedford.
Yeah, no, this looks awesome. This want, much want, lots and lots want.
Well, talking of childishness.
Yes, this is very childish.
And silliness that we do actually quite enjoy. Mm-hmm. But Ken Block has released Gymkhana 9. Now, I watched this on the day of release with... my children, who watched the whole thing while screaming, "How does he do that? How does he do that? It nearly fell in the water. How does he do that?" Over and over again. It is, if you've watched any of Ken Block's stuff, it is the typical wonderful, controlled, drifting, noisy, smoke billowing, tire shredding fun, which I quite enjoy from a distance, but don't want to get any closer than watching it. Please don't ever anyone ask for me to sit in the passenger seat, because I'm not a good passenger.
No, he's not.
So yeah, that's out. It's probably got a gazillion views on YouTube by now. But something I did come across is on TopGear.com, is they've got a list of his videos up to now, all of which are great. I particularly like the Gymkhana 5 San Francisco. I do watch that one over and over again.
I do. Some bits of it were a bit cheesy, but I really liked when he's going up and down Knob Hill or Russian Hill with all the houses. It's up streets there, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's great stuff. Links will be in the show notes.
Mm.
So moving from the ridiculous to the more...
Yeah.
Mundane is probably the word, really. That's mundane isn't right.
Key one, mundane's not right. No, where Andrew's leading with this is that previously I have done a short podcast about the Hyundai iX35 fuel cell vehicle, so the hydrogen-powered Hyundai. And this weekend that we've just had, I actually had it for the full weekend. So I had it from sort of Friday lunchtime-ish through until I returned it this morning, which is now that I'm sitting in York is one of the reasons. I've done some work in between. It's one of the reasons why I'm yawning quite so much tonight. It has been quite a long day with quite a lot of driving. So I had it over the weekend.
Did you spend that entire weekend going, oh my God, it's so normal. It really is normal.
No, I actually got so used to it, I stopped being surprised by it.
Okay, well, that's a trick in itself then.
It is. It is. Now, so the FCV is based on the iX35, which is a really quite an old platform. I think somebody mentioned it was a 7-year-old platform. But the drivetrain is quite incredible. So the drivetrain, just an apologies for repeating myself on this, consists of a hydrogen tank at the back, a battery somewhere in between that's not particularly big, a fuel cell at the front, and an inverter which controls where everything goes. And that's just about it. Inside, you've got a normal-looking auto shifter, part, reverse, neutral, drive, and then you've got a couple of other modes. One is E for eco, when you pull across, and where you would expect to be able to change up a gear by pushing forwards. If you do that, it puts it into eco. I didn't quite work out what it did, but it made me feel better that it said eco on the dashboard. Sure, I'll find out. And the other way
did it glow a different colour as well?
No.
All right, okay.
No, there's no fancy glowiness in the iX35.
Well, that seems to be Hyundai's approach from what I've seen up to now, is they're not... The idea is not to make a very big... Not song and dance isn't quite right, but they're not making a big thing. They're just going, no, you've selected the eco bit.
Yeah.
And we're just going to tell you you've selected the eco, and it's going to be in the same colour and font as everything else, and that's it, we go on. We don't have to put it in a different colour, we don't have to ping at you, we don't have to do
other stuff. There's a funny follow-up to this that I'm going to come to, though.
Okay.
You're right, but there's a funny follow-up that I'm going to come to. The other way, by the way, if I pull back, then that put it into low, which gave me more engine braking, and it upped the regen on the system. The reason there's a battery as well as a fuel cell, by the way, is a fuel cell can only put out a set amount of power at any amount of time. So it's kind of, it's a little bit on or off. There's no sort of ramping up.
So it's like you're limited to one gear, and it's got its range that it can deal with.
No, it's got a certain amount of power it can put out at any one time. And if it makes too much power, if it's making too much for what you need, it puts it to the battery.
Oh, okay.
If it's not making enough, then it pulls from the battery.
Right, okay. Sorry, I see what you're getting.
Okay, so if you have to kneel it out of a junction, it pulls out the battery. It's you're getting power from both the fuel cell and the battery.
So it's giving everything it's got and taking.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's the thing. The last time I drove it, by the way, I'd only driven it on the hill route at Millbrook.
Yep.
So it was very controlled circumstances. It was completely it was completely different to this weekend. So this weekend, I picked it up, we went down, I got shown how to fill it up with hydrogen, which, by the way, is the way that filling up with petrol should be. It is so simple.
What, simple and clean?
It is simple and clean and safe. Not sloshing inflammable liquid around the place, which is
well, that's what happens when you let the public get involved.
I know. It's ridiculous. The way that we fill up with petrol If you once you filled up hydrogen, you realise the way we fill up a petrol is so dangerous.
No,
it really is. It's just ridiculous.
I was wading around puddles tonight as I filled up the car after getting up here because of the way people can't seem to let go of the handle after they pull it out of the...
So anyway, you plug the handle in, you pull up a lever, you once you've activated it because of the way it's an unmanned station, and then it just does it. The pump talks to the car. The car says, I've got about this much. The pump says, okay, well, I know how much you should have, so I'll just weak it in. And all the time it goes along, and it pauses every now and again just to calibrate and make sure both are still in alignment. And it does another clever thing, which is there's a pressure sensor in the pump end and there's a pressure sensor in the car end. So the pump knows what pressure it's putting, what pressure, and it's ridiculous, like 700 kilopascals.
Crikey.
Pressure that's being applied to put this in. Yeah.
You want to make sure that that tank's quite well welded.
I think that's right. I think it's 700 kilopascals. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure after listening to this, we will be told if we are wrong.
We will be told if we're wrong, and I'll have to check.
And apologise.
I apologise profusely to Hyundai if I'm wrong. It does it, but it's measuring the pressure at one and measuring pressure at the other end. If there's any difference in pressure between the two of them, then it just cuts off. That means there's a leak somewhere, and that's not good.
Okay.
But there's so many safety devices in it, but yet it's so simple. And once you've finished, you just release it from the car end. Put it back in its holder, and you're done. It really is so quick, so easy. You can just do it.
You don't then have to go and get the towel and mop up your car then take your gloves off.
You can't pee it all over the place and stuff. It really, really simple. I then endured 5.5 hours of London traffic. London solid traffic. London was just horrible on Friday. It's the worst traffic I've seen in London. Since I moved down, 8 years ago or so? Really grim. And I cannot think of a much better car to have done it in.
Well, why is that? Because you have told me that before.
It's so refined. There's no... You're sitting there in traffic, and when you're sitting there in traffic, you're just there. The iX35...
So the drivetrain was a massive plus, is what you're saying in this.
The drivetrain was a massive plus. I didn't have to think... This sounds so silly. I didn't have to think about anything. I had had it in drive, eco mode, whatever eco did. And basically...
Yes, we're gonna get letters now, aren't we?
It made me feel better. I think it actually changed the amount. It didn't bring back in as much regen. I think it kept the aircon lower. It did some of the other stuff. I'm not sure. I think it dampened the accelerator, making it harder for you to nail it out of stuff and just jab at it. So, sorry. Being grown up and sensible... There were actually some differences there. I think they were mostly software-based as opposed to anything else. And I don't think it really made any fundamental difference to the drivetrain. It was just some other tricks that it could do to just eke out maybe a little bit more. But the drivetrain was so good because it was so smooth. Now, any car you get into, if you think about what's happening, even when a car is idling, you've got pistons going up and down. You've got crankshafts rotating around. You've got gear shafts and idler gears. And there's thousands of explosions going on under the bonnet every minute. And all the proper explosions going on. And that just shakes a vehicle. Mm. No matter how smooth you think a car is. And, you know, I've owned a rotary. And when it was working, it was beautifully smooth. But it's nothing compared to a hybrid or an electric drivetrain. It really isn't. So that just took a whole load of, I don't know, it took a whole load of stress out of it because the thing wasn't, by its absence,
you've realised how much the combustion engine...
Does
actually interfere with you, even if it's a good combustion engine.
Okay, so I'd left my car at Hyundai this morning. I'd driven 50-odd miles, just wanted to get back there. I got into my car, I started it and thought, And it doesn't, it's just it's has a broken. Service. And it just, you could just feel everything vibrate. It sounds so silly. But you could feel everything vibrate. Even just this thing, and I've never noticed that in my car
before. Well, I was in a car today that, under heavy accelerating, I could feel it through the floor.
Yeah. No, this
And now you mention it, you know, when we were lucky enough to drive the i8 early on in the year, when it was in full electric mode.
Yeah.
That's... It is a bizarre feeling because you are noticing more the absence of stuff.
Exactly. And what's nice...
To start off with.
In cars like the iX35, then... You've of course got no noise either. Not just the vibration, there's no noise. Now, there's lots of people who go look at electric cars and they go, oh, well, I want that, I want stonking V8 noise. Ugh. You know, and I'm no stranger to changing the back box on my car. Let me make that completely clear. You know, I have a noisy little Yaris. Okay, the
half of a noisy.
Half of a noisy little Yaris, thank you.
Before you get trouble.
Master standard, but it's still a big, it's still pretty growly. But there's times that when you sit in traffic, when it's a stop-start, and you have to,
Well, it's what I've said, and you've agreed with about automatics, is for the vast majority of us, the vast majority of our journeys, and the vast majority of the time, an automatic is all you need because it takes a level of effort out. Mm-hmm. And having an electrified vehicle running on the battery, however that's powered, takes another level of stress and effort out because it's removed an ambient stress that you aren't possibly acknowledging because you've become used to it.
Yeah, there was a lot of that too, but it was most of that. I mean, the biggest problem with sitting in traffic, was other people's music. You can hear so much of what's going on outside.
You're not listening to back episodes of the Motoring Podcast to drown
it
out.
I have my parents in the car with me. We were having
so you're saying polite, there's the music
we're
of others.
We're having a polite conversation.
Oh no!
But and once that died up after about 2 hours, which was pretty good going for us, then you know, having to listen to other people's background noise was not great. But yeah, it was driving across London in awful traffic. It was really, really good. It was spot on, and all the other pottering about. I mean, I did. There was some motorway stuff. There was some motorways and back roads, all that kind of stuff. And it just was good at all of them. And the win here with the hydrogen as opposed to the electric vehicles was really the fact that I had about 350 miles range. Not to say that I wasn't suffering from range anxiety. Someone who then later on in the day took his car down to 16 miles range before filling it up. I did suffer from some range anxiety over the weekend because we'd had to spend so long in traffic. It had kind of mucked up my planning. I thought I had loads, but I didn't because of the amount of time. So there was a quick trip back to Heathrow on Saturday afternoon to fill up. The fact that there are only about 5 filling stations in the UK, you are keeping a constant eye on the tether that you are around Teddington, around Heathrow. And just making sure you've always got enough. And I was speaking to the Hyundai PR guys, and he was pointing out that he has less range anxiety in the hydrogen car than he does in some of the electric cars. He said, but that's not down to the range so much as the fact that, sure, there's only a couple of hydrogen stations, but at least you know they're working.
Mm.
As opposed to some of the EV charge points where everything's showing that they're working, you turn up and it's like, this is out of service.
Yeah. So I've seen tweets recently that people saying, I've turned up here, not working.
Hmm. What do I do?
Yeah.
So that was awesome. That was a lot of my weekend was spent driving that, done about 350 miles in it. The suspension's a bit hard. But you know,
is that to deal with the extra mechanics as well?
I don't think so. To be honest, I think it's just a factor of the vehicle it's based on.
Okay.
I'd love to see the drivetrain in something more modern, something where the with a niftier sat nav and a better radio and stuff. But fundamentally, I mean, the iX35 is pretty comfortable. Given the amount of time I spent sitting in it on Friday, I have no qualms about the comfort of it generally, and neither did people in the back, people in the front.
Good.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. I've probably waffled far too long on that.
No, but it's interesting because I mean, I know when you were at the SMMT day and the videos and stuff we've talked about, and I said that I enjoyed it, but I mean, they're your gut reactions.
Yeah.
This was a proper test of it. Okay, it was over quite a short period of time, but it was a proper test of it because you were using it in real world conditions, i.e., a stationary London. 5 hours. Yeah. So, you know, that's pretty grim for any vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, it was... How do I put this? It was. I spent a lot of hours in it over the weekend, to be perfectly honest. And I did, but... it was getting to the stage where I was starting to find things that were niggling me. Just little silly things that were niggling me. And they were more to do with the car based on anything to do with the drivetrain.
Mm. So it was the platform, not the mechanics.
Not the mechanics at all. I loved the drivetrain. I loved how smooth it was. There was a pure enjoyment in driving it. The thing that I was going to come back to, which I almost forgot about there, by the way, is it's great that it's so normal, and I've been on about how much just like a car it actually is. But I treat the tech, by the way, in this case, as beta. And by beta, I don't mean Tesla beta. I mean like the traditional tech definition of a beta, in that it's so nearly there.
Hmm.
And it's available to the general public, but it's not really sort of a mainstream model. Sure, you can walk into your Hyundai dealership and you can say, I wish to spend £53,000 on an iX35 FCV. And they'll probably look at you funny, but it is possible to go in and buy one. So it is there, it is publicly available, but there are still little bits and pieces that could be refined. There's a couple of things with this one, which is that the range counter never counts up the way, it only ever counts down. So if you're, and this was pointed out to me beforehand, thankfully, and if you're, so if you start driving more economically, it's not that it goes back up to reflect what your new range is, it just doesn't go down any further.
So, if it said 215 miles and you suddenly start driving in a more economical, regenerative manner, it waits until the thing gets to 215 miles again and then starts to go down.
Or you're doing that and then you have to pull out of a roundabout and off it in a bit more of a hurry, and then it just drops dramatically. Which
I did 50 yards, not 60 miles.
Which can be a little bit heart-stopping, especially if, you know, you're not really hugely familiar with it. You've not really learned quite what the range is and quite what it does. And that's one of the things. So whilst the display in the middle could be set, you know, if you weren't using the rubbish sat-nav that I gave up with and just used Waze on my phone, then you could set it to show where all the power was going. And that's fun. It's distracting as hell. But it's really fun. And it's good. And I tried to do it without other people in the car because they were more likely to point at it. But I would have liked something to tell me how well I was driving. And I know that, I mean, you've
had... Oh, you don't want gamification, do you?
I do. Actually.
Oh, no.
This was one of the things. Now, I would, at the start of this weekend, I would never have predicted that I wanted gamification. I wanted little petals on flowers. I wanted little leaves on my little plant, like some other Japanese brand, or some Japanese brands do. Yeah? And I know that you've had an Outlander Fair, and you, therefore, were subject to gamification in the number of petals on your flower.
I never got it up to 5.
You never got it up to 5? Nobody seems to have it.
I've seen a tweet of a picture with someone with 5.
That's because that's how much of an achievement it is.
Yes, quite.
But I just wanted something to tell me. Didn't necessarily want gamification, but I wanted
something to acknowledge.
Something to tell me that I was doing it right.
Mm, okay.
Because I didn't know. Am I better having a long regen at a low amount of charge going in? There's a big dial that says power and charge. Off. Or am I better off having a short regen that's you know, harder on the brakes, and therefore it's dipping further into charge, what's my best technique here? And I felt that was missing, but I feel that that's also part of the bitterness of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you think hydrogen is viable if the infrastructure can be built?
Yes, I do. I'm particularly viable for one of my pet hates, which is taxis and stuff like that, and for the more commercial end, where you maybe have a fleet vehicle which you can't spare it to charge for you know, 2 or 3 hours.
Okay,
and stuff.
Right, yeah.
So I was thinking about this with taxis and things, where you want to do a swap over, a switch over of drivers, because many taxis are driven 24 yep. hours. You want to do a quick switch over, and it takes the same length of time just to fill up with diesel. And for that kind of situation, I think there's a lot of sense there. Especially if you're running it in a fleet setup, that way actually it lessens the impact of the lack of infrastructure.
Mm. You're going back to a base.
If you're working from a base or working in a confined area, as most London
cities. So an urban, it lends itself very well to an urban type.
It lends itself to that kind of fleet urban environment,
yeah.
But it also lends itself to longer distances, because of course you've got that much time, as yeah. long as you've got that wider infrastructure. So stuff like, was it Fraser-Nash? Fraser-Nash Consortium were one of the people looking at the new London taxi design a little while ago. There was lots of noise and then nothing seemed to have happened. Keep an eye on it. And it was this kind of ugly square version of it. Yeah. I actually think fuel cells are a very viable and sensible idea for that kind of vehicle in that kind of use case. I don't think it's the best choice for everyone. I think most people could just get away with electric.
So it's an additional option.
It's an additional option. It's not instead of electric. It's certainly a stepping stone to electric.
Okay.
Until we can get the electric ranges or the charge periods. That's where it wins. Do you want a short charge period and being able to fill up with the same kind of speed as petrol or diesel? Win. Hydrogen. Do you want 350 miles range at a go? At the moment, win. Easily hydrogen. Because electric can't do either of those. I don't know how long a term fuel will be. I don't know how long it'll take electric to catch up. But those are the two use cases. I think for most of us doing pottery journey, plug-in, can wait for a bit, then electric is more than good enough for us.
Okay.
But I think that there are blooming good use cases there for hydrogen.
Good. Yeah, that's interesting. Right, I think we better move on.
Yeah, sorry, that was way longer.
As it's now Wednesday.
I know.
Now, but to be fair, I've done a fair amount of waffling tonight, so it's not you.
It's me.
But it's all of us. On Automotive News Europe's website, they have, since 2008, done a section on the 25 leading women in European automotive industry,
yes.
Funnily enough. And I'm not going to run through all 25.
No.
But I'm going to pick out the ones that are based in the UK,
mm-hmm.
Because it's furthers on the back of the, was it the Autocar Award that was acknowledging excellent women in automotive industry, whatever the award
in
was
the
called.
UK automotive
yeah, it was
industry.
It was some.
It was a such a strange name, but it was very long.
Yeah,
but yeah, absolutely.
So I will start with Daniela Vagnol, who is the chief product engineer at JLR or Jaguar Land Rover.
Mm-hmm.
There is Elizabeth Hill, whose title is architecture planning director at Jaguar Land Rover. Whatever architecture planning director is.
Well, that's making sure there's the same.
It's going to be the platforms can be expanded and contracted to fit all the.
Yeah, the platform architecture as opposed to the buildings.
Yes, no, I realised it wasn't buildings, even though that is my. Whenever I hear architecture, that's what I think of, thanks to my history. And the third one was Linda Jackson, who. we have talked about before, who's the CEO of Citroen, which is obviously PSA Group, which is excellent. There are another 22 women discussed, and there will be a link in the show notes, and you can see who they are, what their job titles are, and the companies they're from. But it's...
We missed one. Just one lady.
Did
we
I?
Missed Judith Richardson, Vice President of Purchasing for Nissan Europe, who is based in Cranfield, in Bedfordshire.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That is incredibly poor of me. But, yes, that's excellent. And the more we see of that, the better.
Yeah.
We are big supporters of seeing anything that shows exactly what everybody who is connected with the motoring industry does is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right, so an hour and many minutes later, we are at the "and finally," Alan.
Oh, we are, yes, well, finally. Finally, friend of the show, and one of we were discussing this earlier on, one of the people who is responsible for this happening.
He is
directly.
He is
Major Gav. He has, and it is catalogued on his own site, Petrolblog. He has bought himself another car.
How big is his fleet now?
It's quite huge.
He must.
I think it was five. This has made it six or something.
He must own an abandoned farm or something that has many sheds.
I think so, yeah. Quality sheds. Yeah. So he's. So this is. Might as well read it out. It's a Citroen Zara VTS in Claudia Schiffer yellow. As you point out, Claudia Schiffer yellow is a much, much better way of describing it than BB Puke. So yeah, by all means go. He loves it. He hates the noise, but he loves the way it drives. He loves
the seat. Doesn't he say the comforts?
Yeah, it would be the comfort. He loves the engine. He just says it sounds appalling.
Well, he can fix that by sticking a that equivalent WRX exhaust I found in my local car park.
Yes.
Something like that. That'll make it.
And can lose small dogs up. But yeah, he's he reckons he now has one of the holy trinities of modern. Well, he hasn't used the word in here, but I think it's the holy trinity of modern Citroen goodness, almost. And that is the Zara VTS, the ZX 16 valve, and the AX GT.
The only AX other one GT. The problem I have with Zara time. Was it the
blandest
Blamongi Citroen time?
It was.
And it was a very, for me personally, who is a very big fan of Citroen, it was incredibly disappointing.
My time, I would replace it with the Xantia X Activa, which is the one that is level.
Yeah, I quite like to go back to a BX. I've owned a BX, but I quite like another one. Mrs. Crack Windscreen would kill me.
Yes,
but
I'm sure.
She hated the one that we had. But I loved it.
All he's saying is next threesome, so to speak. Saxo VTS, Xantia Activa, and a Mahari. Trouble with Maharis is the price. Yeah, so. Anything that runs. So. But yeah, again, the link will be in the show notes. And you can go and see the pictures. Watch the Claudia Schiffer advert going up for the undies. And
yes. Well done, Gav. Even though I'm not totally in love with that, I think the cracking.
Cracking
choice. I'd like to experience it, but I don't think it's for me.
No. Anyway, shall we round up for this week?
I think we better.
Well, so for this part of this week. Goodness knows we've got plenty of other stuff happening this week. But don't forget, folks, that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, which is, of course, the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget to leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. As I say, week after week after week, it really does matter. In the meantime, Andrew, best way to get in touch with you?
Best way is via Twitter, where I can be found under @crackwindscreen. If people want to get in touch with you specifically, Alan, as opposed to the show, how can they do that?
Then it's @AJPBradley on Twitter. We'll be back next week. But until then...
No, we will. We will.
You just distracted me by nodding. Scares me. Right. Yes. We'll be back next week. Definitely. Until then,
maybe twice.
Possibly twice. Goodness. Until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.